This is the first episode on Ziwani's Reframed channel, as well as the first episode in a series titled Redemptive Leadership in a VUCA World. VUCA refers to the popular acronym for Volatility, Uncertainty, Complexity, and Ambiguity. As Christians in business, we can fundamentally shape our increasingly VUCA marketplace, bringing light and life to people, as well as redemptive ideologies and practices within our industries. In this episode, we will hear about mastering complexity. And who better to listen to than Brendan Smith, a former British Army soldier that served in the Afghanistan War. Brendan is now the COO of an organization that supports NPOs. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
My name is Brendan. I currently work at Valcare, which is a non-governmental organization in Paarl. And we focus on making sure that social effort has actual impact. We work with social investors to make sure that the money that they give goes to exactly where it's supposed to be. My history is primarily in disaster response and humanitarian aid. Before Valcare, I worked for a UK organization running a whole lot of projects across Africa and the Middle East. My primary job for 10 years was in the British military, where I was a captain in the British Army. And I was at university studying business finance and business administration, and I was focused on going into stockbroking, and where I thought I was going to have spend my life. And during that time, I felt God really challenged me to join the British Army. I was quite influenced by what was happening in Rwanda and the genocide, and I'd seen Kosovo and Bosnia and the conflict that happened there. And as I started reading about these things, I saw that there was a component in NATO and the British military that focused on humanitarian aid. And then I felt that was what I wanted to go and do. And so during my time in the British Army, I was based in Germany with the Allied Rapid Reaction Corps, which is NATO's highest deployable unit. We were scheduled to go into Afghanistan to take over the operations that were happening in Afghanistan. So I went to Afghanistan initially for one tour, which is 6 months. And while I was there, they asked for volunteers to do an additional tour. So I volunteered and I did another 6 months. So I was there for a year with a two-week break in between for some R&R. So the very first day I arrived in Afghanistan, we got flown in with one of the Hercules airplane, got taken to our camp, and my first night there, we arrived at night, and I just got to sleep. And as I got to sleep, a rocket came in between our shipping container where we were sleeping and the shipping container next to us. It missed us by about 60 centimeters. My head, about 60 centimeters across. And that was my first day in Afghanistan. It was, it didn't let up from there. In the country, there was a number of elements that were hostile towards us. The Taliban were there, so they were the biggest hostility force. But there were also warlords. There were, the local population wasn't all that sure that we were doing good. We had to work a lot to try and convince them what we were doing was for their benefit. So they were initially hostile towards us. And you can walk down the street without wondering who would attack you. About five or six times where the convoy I was traveling in was attacked. My vehicle itself was hit by a suicide bomb. 19 people were killed around us. A lot of just violence and chaos that was happening. And in amongst that, because I was there to do humanitarian aid, we were trying to convince the local population what we were doing there was for their benefit and to help them. Because we were also working in a NATO environment, there were 36 different nationalities in our headquarters. So we had 1,000 officers and soldiers. My small unit, we were 27 officers. We have 19 different countries. So that's 19 different cultures, 19 different languages, 19 different ways of doing things that we had to try and navigate through and understand each other. One of the things I learned most about in that time was not to be prejudiced, not to have assumptions. We had to find the common goal, the common strategy, and all work towards that. My job in that office or that unit was coordination. So I had to make sure that we were all working together. One of the other challenges that we faced was the number of conflicting agendas. And that could be also the people we were working with. A country might have a political agenda of why they were in Afghanistan, and that agenda would dictate how they would work. And there were other agendas outside. There were agendas from some of the stakeholders that we worked with, the politicians. Sometimes a government official would also be a warlord. I remember one time I was working with a government official, and the 2 days before that, I was in a briefing where we had highlighted this person as a potential child trafficker. But 2 days later, I was discussing building orphanages with them. Everything that we did had influence, not just in our small little unit, but it had international influence. I once made a suggestion and I wrote a report about it, a small idea I had, which was just a small idea, but it got pushed up the chain and I wondered, I didn't have any feedback about this idea. And I found that it was being debated at the NATO's highest level, political level. So everything had influence, everything had consequence. And one of the challenges we had was to try and filter this information. We would coordinate what was happening in all the different provinces, and every time an incident happened, we would have to respond to that incident. So dealing with a lot of information on a national scale is quite challenging, especially when an incident happens. An American convoy knocked down an Afghan child and killed him. And it was quite tragic, but the whole city erupted into a riot there. So that was quite challenging, navigating through the city while riots were happening. So my team was often on telephones or radios to try and calm people down, to let them know that we were on our way, and to navigate them to safety. In all of that, we had over 100 safe houses that were attacked, and thankfully we didn't lose any single international employee. So one of the first things that we learned at the Military Academy Sandhurst was planning. And we go through a process of helping people think through a chaotic situation. And the process is called a combat estimate. A combat estimate teaches you how to think through chaotic situations. When the bullets are flying, you need to be able to have your thoughts structured. And you start off by asking yourself a number of questions and finding those answers in the situation. So one of the questions would be, what is my situation? And the second question would be, what do I have to do in the situation? The third question might be, what resources do I have available to me? In our business environment, it might be that we are faced with a lot of chaotic situations. And I would advise to start before you get into the chaotic situations, to formulate some way of working through to create a plan. Work through a strategic process so that when the chaos happens, you already know how to do it. You already know how to think through these chaotic situations. Your thoughts aren't influenced by the chaos around you. They're influenced by finding solutions within the chaos to achieve what you need to achieve. Within the combat estimate, there's a section called pause. It's named pause. And when you think through the process, you actually have to stand back from your plan. Stand back, take a pause. Whether it's 5 minutes or 30 seconds or 2 days, take a step back. Think through the process before you start giving orders. There's a famous story during the Falklands War. And Colonel H. Jones was part of a battle, a famous battle at Goose Green. and he was leading a battle against the Argentinians, and they were outnumbered 10-1, and he was fighting through this, and things just weren't working out. And in the middle of the battle, he ordered all his men to stop and have tea. And it allowed him, that space allowed him a chance to think through the problem again and develop, readjust the plan. And then they won a significant victory in that war. For business leaders, I would suggest take time out, think things through. Make sure, instead of doing knee-jerk reactions, even if you've got a solid plan, take some time to think through that plan. Take a pause. That pause might be, it might feel counterintuitive, because when the action is happening, you need to make decisions quickly. But sometimes a quick decision actually costs you time in the end. John 16 says, in this world you'll have trouble. It might be a little bit out of context about what I'm going to say, but there's always trouble. There's always things that are going to influence or affect your plan. There's a military philosopher called von Clausewitz who said, no plan survives the first contact with the enemy. So even though you might have the best plan, even though you think you've got everything sorted out, as soon as you have contact with an enemy or a different situation, that plan is going to fall apart. You need to be prepared for that. You need to prepare your team for that. You need to tell your team, we have a plan, but these are the things that might influence the plan. If your team knows that, they feel a little bit more comfortable when things start going wrong. So as a business leader, plan for things to go wrong. Have contingencies in place. Make sure that your plans aren't so rigid that you can't adjust to a changing environment. People have this perception that in the military there's a lot of screaming and shouting, but there isn't. It's a lot of quiet voices telling you what to do and expecting you to do it. So this philosophy in military is called mission command, where a commander tells you what to do and you are supposed to get on with it. So you should know exactly what your commander is wanting of you, and you should know where your position is, and anticipate, use initiative. Think about what they're trying to achieve and how you can support them. Before we went to Afghanistan, we spent a lot of time in training. And one of the things that was drummed into us that was the rules of engagement. So rules of engagement is how you react to situations in a legal way. If somebody is shooting at you, how can you respond? And these rules of engagement change depending on the situation. The idea is that when the bullets are flying, you don't have the time to think about what the rules of engagement are. You don't have time to take out your little pad to say, in this situation I need to do this, in this situation I need to do that. You should have already made those decisions beforehand. So when you're faced with a situation, you can respond instinctively. In a business context, we're often faced with very difficult decisions. We have to think about right or wrong, morality. And when we're faced with these situations, it is not the right time to think that through at that point. I would suggest utilize the rules of engagement framework to already have made those decisions beforehand, to have your ethics policies in place, so that when you're faced with a situation, your decision has been made. You don't have to think about it, because in the fog of war, in the fog of chaos, you can't always think straight. You can't always rely on your decision-making at that point. So make your decision beforehand. Are you going to do business in this type of way? Are you going to accept these people as your suppliers or these people as your customers? Think about how you're going to react to certain situations that may be unethical or ethical. Already make your decision. Already have your rules of engagement in place. One of my most memorable moments in Afghanistan was a picture taken by a friend of mine, and we were in a camp, and in this camp that we were in, this camp had been attacked every day for 3 months, sometimes two or three times a day. And the picture that my friend took, I was sleeping in the hammock, and behind me you can see a whole lot of bullet marks on the wall from all the battles that had happened in this camp. And why I love this picture so much is in amongst the chaos and the violence and all of that, there was a moment of peace. And I can only attribute that to God, that God brought me peace in that time. And so for a business leader faced with chaos, faced with uncertainty, feeling overwhelmed, I would say find your source in God. That is where you should find your source. One of the things that I learned in my journey was seek God in the right way. My life verses are Isaiah 58. And Isaiah 58, I'm going to paraphrase here, but Isaiah 58 starts with somebody seeking God, and they're asking the question to God, why aren't you hearing me? Why aren't you answering me? And God answers in a surprising way. And I read it recently, and I was wondering who this person was that was actually seeking God. And one of the verses that came up is that revelation to me was, this was actually a business leader that was seeking God. They're seeking God, and God says to them, you're seeking God, you're asking questions, you're seeking me, you're asking questions, you're fasting, you're praying in one way, but in the other way, it says, you are oppressing your workers. And that for me says that God is interested in not just in our spiritual lives, but our professional lives. He is interested in us having a relationship with him personally, but also in how we do business. Isaiah 58 goes on and says, if you start thinking about other things beyond yourself, he will start answering. So stopping the oppression around you, treating your workers correctly, finding ways to rebuild society. Keep doing those things, and that is actually when God will start listening to you. But as a business leader, God wants us to be part of the solution to our country. God wants us to be involved in it. It might be a small thing. It might be looking beyond your business and saying, how can my profit from my business, or how can my business contribute to rebuilding the society? One of the things that I really love that is so poignant for this discussion is it says that we will be nation builders. That is fantastic. If we all play our part in being the solution, we will be nation builders. And then God says he will look after us. And then he will open up to us. So don't live two separate lives. Bring your business life and your spiritual life together. Find a way to contribute to our society and be the solution. Look for those around you. Look for ways around you that you can assist and help. Partner with churches, partner with non-governmental organizations, and then God will give you guidance and he will look after you. That is his promise.
In the next episode of this series, we'll hear from Afrika Mhlophe as he discusses navigating cultural complexity, an especially important skill for doing business on this continent. Remember to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss out. Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Ziwani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.